Hey, Bacon, want to do a pod together?
Let's do a pod.
Let's do a pod.
High drive into right, back at the wall.
Swung on a joke into right field. There it goes. See ya.
First hit of the year. Oh. He drives one. Deep left field. That goes up to it. Back near the wall. It's out of here.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, folks. Welcome to episode 71 of the Big Fly Pod with your co-hosts, Chris B. Bacon and T. Lou. What's going on here? I mean, did you just jump in here, dude? Who are you?
How the heck are we?
What's going on?
I brought in, I wanted to, for this episode, I thought it was only right because we are going to talk about the Blue Jays, folks. We are going to talk about the great country up north. And I did want to bring an expert in the field of work for the Blue Jays to discuss that. But I needed a co-host for us to talk about other things. And so I felt like none other than my boy, Chris Boulding, but what the group of friends refers to as Chris P. Bacon. Bacon, how are you, buddy? I'm so happy to have you on here.
Oh, thanks for having me, buddy. Yeah, I mean, you were looking for an expert, but I was available, so here we are.
I
can't wait to get into this. Let's do it. Let's rip.
We will get into it, but just for everybody to kind of know how Bacon and I met, we met through mutual friends, and actually through the world of gaming for a while. And funny enough, we all stayed connected. Met up in Canada together. It's been sort of a wild ride for the entire group. But we are, one thing I know for sure, Bacon, is we both have a true love for baseball and MLB The Show. Shout out to that being released tonight. Heard the servers are down a little bit though.
That's good to know because I did not pre-order.
I didn't pre-order either. I just got home. So
I'm cheap.
Yeah. I don't know. The servers, I heard the servers were a mess is what I heard.
We'll get there.
Why don't you tell the people about you a little bit, B? Come on.
What's to say? I'm Canadian. That's probably a good place to start. I live in Victoria, British Columbia, sunny Vancouver Island. It's a beautiful day out here today. Spring has sprung.
Wow.
I just love talking ball. You know, that I think is the reason we became fast friends more than anything. You know, the two of us are just ready to chop it up any moment we really need to.
That is very true. You and I noticed right away that you were very, very, very in tune with everything going on in the world of the Jays. Next thing I know, you're in tune with basically everything going on with baseball. And so we were supposed to start this podcast together. I decided to go elsewhere for contractual reasons. Based on my country, I had to stay
meet my fee.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous, especially the Canadian American dollar. It's just not working out. And then turns out, you know, you were like, hey, maybe you should have me on for the Blue Jays episode. And I was like, you know, Bacon, there are smart men in this world, and then there are leaders. And you're one of them. And I felt like I needed to get you on. So let's do this, dude. We talked about you. You're obviously Canadian. But I think what people need to understand is that Bacon is fully invested in the world of baseball. And the world of baseball, B, had a hell of a last 48 to 72 hours. We saw really one of the more intriguing trades that we've seen in quite some time based on the situation, right? So Dylan Cease is now a Padre. This comes the literal day, I think even night of, before the, like, literally 12 hours before this team is supposed to travel to South Korea.
I think they're on the plane right now. Yeah.
I think they're on the plane right now. And I figured that he was not going to end up pitching or being a part of that series anyways. But the Padres got a man that really was tied to many different organizations throughout the offseason. 2 years left to control for Dylan Cease on his current deal. The White Sox, which has been under the regime of Chris Getz, the newest GM of the White Sox. And this guy has what the kids would say cooked this offseason. In the deal, they get Padres number 5, number 7, and number 8 top prospects. That goes in order: right-handed pitcher Drew Thorpe, Samuel Zavala, Yairo Iriarte, not my specialty with this, and then a right-handed reliever in Steven Wilson. Bacon, before I get your thoughts on something on the trade here, I do want to read what the White Sox have done this offseason, because I think it leads us down the path of everything that has really just been a shocker at the end of the day with what's happened. So here, let me pull up that list here. While I do that, actually, why don't you go ahead and give your thoughts? Why don't you go ahead and give your thoughts on it while I kind of look for this tweet, because I'm terrible at looking through my phone.
Yeah, I think I'm higher on the trade than it seemed like a lot of people were. I think probably the way to figure out if you're in on it or not is kind of how you feel about those three pieces, right? Steven Wilson's kind of just a guy. He'll probably move at the deadline to a different team. But you look at Drew Thorpe, who's getting frequent flyer miles this offseason, was in the Juan Soto trade from the Yankees to the Padres, turns right back around, goes to the White Sox, where he's probably first or second on the depth chart to come up if there's an opening in the big league rotation. Iriarte is a big kind of, you know, this is how they make him, right? This is what a pitching prospect looks like: throws really hard, spins a breaking ball a little bit, big frame, has some command, not as much control. And then Samuel Zavala, I think, is the guy who's kind of sliding under the radar in this deal in terms of like a projectable, you know, probably a little bit stretched in center, but could play there and will be a really rock solid corner outfielder for you if that's what you want him to do, right? You know, you can play center, but you're probably more comfortable with a better center field defender out there. So for me, right, I think what it comes down to, and it really comes down to Drew Thorpe for me, who I have been a little bit skeptical of in the past, but MLB teams are telling you right now they really, really believe in Drew Thorpe. You go back to that Juan Soto deal, the exact same thing happened there, where people started to think, hey, maybe the Padres didn't quite get as much as they wanted. Maybe this is a bit of an under the radar. I don't know exactly how to say it. I don't speak for a living. This is a bit of an underwhelming. There's the word I was looking for.
Wow.
Underwhelming return for Juan Soto. But now you go back and the same reaction exists for Dylan Cease. So what I think that probably tells you is that people inside baseball think Drew Thorpe is one of these guys, right? He's a near term starting pitcher, 6 years of control. And he's probably a mid-rotation guy as early as post-All-Star break 2024. That has an absolute ton of value, right? Then if you get a big leaguer out of Iriarte or Zavala, whichever one that is, you really start to reestablish the White Sox timeline, maybe on that Colson Montgomery timeline, who we can kind of get into a bit later, and set yourself up to be a competing team in the AL Central as early as next year, maybe 2026. Like it's the AL Central, you know.
It is the AL Central, brother. And that was a hell of a breakdown for a guy who should be speaking for a living, because that was tremendous. I think what's fascinating about all this is I want to talk about the White Sox first, because the Padres are, it's the wild, wild west with this team. Okay. I said this to this guy, the guy who runs Locked On Padres, Javier Reyes, and when I talked to him about the Padres' outlook for the upcoming season. And I've given a lot of credit to AJ Preller. I've said, hey, it's been like a scientific experiment with this team the last 7 years, and how this guy basically has just been sort of like, hey, I don't care what you think of me. I'm going to just throw it out there and see what works. Right? We saw with the Juan Soto deal. We are now seeing it with the Dylan Cease deal. We are seeing with these expensive contracts. This team's on a different planet. But here's what the White Sox have done, which I do give a lot of credit to Chris Getz and what he's done. So they've gotten rid of Aaron Bummer, Gregory Santos, Christian Mania, Matthew Thompson, and now Dylan Cease. They have turned that into Michael Soroka, Jared Schuster, Nicky Lopez, Braden Shoemake, okay, Riley Gones, Max Stassi, Prelander Baroa, Zach DeLoach, a 68th overall pick in this upcoming draft, Dom Fletcher, Bailey Horn, Drew Thorpe, Samuel Zavala, Yairo Iriarte, you're getting better, Ty, and then Steven Wilson. I say that is, out of those five names that he gave, that they had, Gregory Santos, in my eyes, was pretty valuable, but bummer, it's worthless to have a good reliever right now, right? Unless you wanted to get value at the trade deadline, but you want to get rid of that as soon as possible. So Gregory Santos and Bummer are in that sense. And then Dylan Cease. Dylan Cease so far here this spring has looked tremendous. He's had 14 Ks over eight innings pitched, 207 batting average against, under a one whip. He's looked absolutely fantastic. And a lot of the concerns and everybody that they had was from last year in 2023, like hard hit percentage went up. Other numbers went up. A lot of the metrics that you do not want to see from a pitcher that you're trying to trade at the deadline. So I think that from my perspective, the White Sox are doing something where we're going to pull the Band-Aid off, kind of like an opposite of AJ Preller, in a sense of we're going to just take this back to where it should be. Yoan Moncada is going to be coming off his deal. Eloy's probably gone. Let's start over. Let's use Colson Montgomery as our centerpiece and really build forward. I didn't know if you had anything to add there on the White Sox side of things.
I think it all comes back to that 2025, maybe early 2026 timeline that we're talking about. When you look at the return on a lot of those deals, Mike Soroka is a guy who's proven he's a number two starter in the big leagues when he's healthy. So you take a chance on a guy like that bouncing back from two Achilles injuries. The White Sox know a guy like that in Jake Berger, right? One of the few people who's done that and then bounced back and turned into a valuable big leaguer again. So they have experience with guys like that. Braden Shumake's a major league infielder right now. A lot of those relievers are kind of the guys like Steven Wilson that you think you can just flip right back and flip right back. 68th pick helps you move some money around in the draft. Maybe you can kind of float a big money guy down to your pick. I don't know exactly where they pick this year, but yeah, I would say I'm cautiously optimistic about what the White Sox have done. It was interesting, right? Because they have Kenny Williams in there for so long, Rick Hahn's there for so long, and you promote from within and Chris Getz. And I think a lot of people thought that they might tear it down. The guy's got a lot of job security. He's kind of the guy who can do the rebuild down to the studs, but he's got so much information on the guys that they already have that you're sitting there thinking about how this could be maybe not the next great White Sox team. Like, I don't think we're talking about 2005 in any real sense, but this could be a team that makes the playoffs, you know, 24 months from now, or I guess 18 months from now, and it's season and a half, right? Like you're looking at this team as, and it all falls on the back of Colson Montgomery, but it is a team that could compete for the AL Central crown as early as next season. Like a lot stranger things have happened.
I completely agree with you. This has been, if you look at the AL Central, while the Royals have been a little better than what people thought they were going to do this offseason, it's one of those things where, like, the Royals are now putting themselves in a position where they saw an opportunity and it really didn't require much. They obviously made their huge extension on Bobby Witt, and they got some very, very nice young talent. Their pitching situation now is in good flux because of Cole Reagans, but that now you got to do it again now this year for Cole, right? So you think about them, you think about the Guardians, they're always going to hang around, and they got some pretty good teams, pretty good players coming around and Chase DeLauder and Kyle Manzardo, right? But they may lose Shane Bieber. Gavin Williams has already got an arm injury. Other teams across the division, like the Tigers as well, you got a lot of teams that if they figure it out, they can take the next step, right? And the White Sox were just not in a position to take that next step. Now, let's talk Padres, because the Padres now, when everybody thought that getting rid of Juan Soto, it was like, okay, well, this is where it's over. Well, I think people forget that they have spent so much money on this team that they still have to provide a competitive product on the field to make up for that money, right? Tatis, Machado, and Bogarts have massive deals, and they have to somehow figure out a way to be competitive on the field. And now with this Cease addition, I think that they are now seeing, hey, maybe we kind of just slip in to the wild card. maybe we're not going to win it, the NL West, but they're now seeing what the Diamondbacks did last year. Diamondbacks haven't spent over $900 million on three players, but they see an opportunity and say, okay, let's just see if this pans out. We get rid of some of our players, but those players may or may not make it, right? And be an impact. Why don't we trade them and make an impactful, get an impactful player now that we'll have for 2 years? I personally I'm still kind of shocked by the deal, Bacon, if I'm being honest with you, because I just didn't see the Padres making a move like this. But I also give a lot of credit to Preller, where he says prospects are prospects. You know what I mean? What were your thoughts? Like, where do you sit on this?
Super interesting. I think AJ Preller, and everybody knows what's gone on with ownership there, right? With Peter Seidler. I think Preller is maybe the best talent evaluator in the game. Like that guy finds prospects everywhere, finds them in international free agency, finds them in the NPB, finds them in the KBO, finds them in the draft. He finds them late in the draft. They're bringing Jackson Merrill with them to Korea. That was like the 27th pick in the draft 2 years ago. They're going to play him at a different position. He finds good baseball players, right? And that's why they've been able to do these kinds of trades. You trade CJ Abrams, Mackenzie Gore, James Wood, Robert Hassel for Soto, turn right back around, trade that for Thorpe and the guys they got in that Soto deal, turn right back around and flip Thorpe for Cease. It might not be a plan. Like I kind of think of AJ Preller as like, I sort of see him as like, to make a dated pop culture reference, he's like the main character in Memento. Like he wakes up every day and has no idea what he did the day before. But you get to opening day, right? And we're not even a week away from opening day. You get to opening day, and I think the Padres are maybe not a shoe-in, but I think they're really a really solid bet to get into one of those wild card spots. And we can get into this later. The Dodgers are vulnerable this year, big time vulnerable this year. So the NL West is up for grabs. I'm not convinced by what the Giants have done. The Diamondbacks, you know, it's one of these things where the World Series hangover exists, and I think they've tried to fend that off some of it. But the NL West could be up for grabs, and the Padres have positioned themselves to where they could take a shot. And if they end up 10 games below 500 at the deadline, Preller will trade these guys for prospects, and we'll go right back over and do it again. He'll wake up tomorrow and forget he ever had Dylan Cease. He might not know who Drew Thorpe is. Drew Thorpe could walk past him on the sidewalk and he wouldn't know who it is, right? Because that's what they do. They go get James Wood with the 64th overall pick, turn him around a year and a half later, and he's the centerpiece for Juan Soto, one of the best hitters in baseball. Like I think when you look at what the Padres have done, and everybody likes to laugh at the Padres, and I think their contracts are like disastrous. That Xander Bogaerts deal is terrible. It's awful. But he puts a quality team on the field. They haven't gotten anywhere with it. I think they went to game 7 with the Phillies 2 years ago, right? Am yep. I doing the math right? And that Phillies team is exactly another example of what the Diamondbacks did, right? You get into the playoffs and you get hot. That's the only way, you know, people talk about in baseball, and we're kind of getting into more big picture thoughts. People talk about in baseball, what does a World Series team look like? What does it look like to be a team that's serious about winning is kind of something that's been thrown around with the Blue Jays this offseason. Is this team serious about winning? And the only way to be serious about winning is to make the playoffs. That is the only box you have to tick. As soon as you get into the playoffs, you have to be hot. That's the plan right there. Get into the playoffs, get hot. That's every single World Series team has, you know, going back to when there were two teams, right? When it was for the American League pennant and the National League pennant, and then you'd go play, you had to be hot in those 7 games. That's the only blueprint you can follow to win the World Series. And Preller gives his team a chance to do that every year.
Let's talk about a team. We are a non-biased podcast.
Of course.
We are non-biased. I don't even know the term podcasters. But I think we could both agree that a team that we would both be okay that wouldn't make the playoffs is in New York. And so Gerrit Cole, Gerrit Cole, this really brought crazy news because this was right before the whole Dylan Cease fiasco went down, because then of course the trade talks heated up with the Yankees, and supposedly a trade package was made, and that obviously wasn't agreed upon. But news as of now, if you haven't heard already, of course, is that Gerrit Cole is likely going to miss a few months here. Mark Vinesand said tonight, which is on Thursday around 7:30 p.m. Pacific Standard, said that Gerrit Cole will not need Tommy John surgery as of now, per source. This was, of course, he had his initial diagnosis and he went for a second opinion to a specialist over in California. He will rest and rehab his elbow with conservative treatment. The hope is that he will be able to return to the rotation in 10 to 12 weeks. Let's get to the chase here, dude. Let's be frank. Carlos Rodon is either going to win the Yankees, the AL East, or they are not going to make the playoffs. And I am willing to make that bold ass take right now here on this podcast. I do want to hear your thoughts, though, because you being a Blue Jays fan, a non-biased podcaster. Where does this now lead in your eyes? What do the Yankees need to do?
I mean, let's talk about it, right? The Yankees are cooked. Cashman is out. Aaron Boone is out. No, I mean, I think what's snuck under the radar here, and we'll get to the Gerrit Cole stuff in a second because I think it's really interesting. And I think the Yankees of any team has been through this with Masahiro Tanaka. So they of any team have maybe the right to be a bit optimistic. But what's going on with Aaron Judge is really interesting too. His toe is not 100% from last year. He said it'll never be 100%. He's doing maintenance on it in March. I don't know about you, Ty. Maintenance in March scares the shit out of me. That is not something you want to hear about your franchise player, your star player, your $360 million man. Carlos Rodon, $162 million, goes out there and has one of the worst opening seasons since Keigawa. The Yankees are set up now in a position where they really need a lot of things to break right for them. And I think that's a position that they're uncomfortable in. But the division's a bit soft. You know, there's some room to have maybe a slow April, a slow May, and still get kind of hot in the back half. You know, they did it in reverse last year where they were super hot in the first half and kind of tailed off. If you can do that in reverse, slow first half, hot second half, there is still a chance that this team can be a contender. You know, I would really have a hard time ruling out any team that has Aaron Judge and Juan Soto back to back. That's just like not something I would ever feel comfortable doing. But it's really, it really requires Gerrit Cole to be back in 2 months, if you ask me. And the alternative, right, is if he's not back in 2 months, we're probably looking at Tommy John, and he's probably back at the trade deadline 2025. Now we're really in trouble because the Yankees have gone in on this season, moving what they did for Juan Soto on a one-year deal. I don't think they're going to really be super interested in paying him a lot of money to play left field. You've already got Judge in the outfield, who's kind of a, you know, he's a good defender, but he has some injury issues, needs to play some DH every once in a while. Stanton's got to play a lot of DH. They're positioned in a way that 2024 is really important for them. It's important for the players, but it's important for Boone, I think, to keep his job. It's important for Cashman to keep his job.
You mentioned a very, very good point there, which I didn't even, I remember thinking about this when we talked about, we didn't talk about this on the Yankees episode, but I remember when we were talking about everything that went down when Cashman lost his cool a little bit on that interview that he had where he was talking about all his players and they were referencing, hey, the IL kind of seems like your second home, you know, like this has been tough to watch. So I think about, you mentioned earlier with Tanaka, I think about Severino. Like the Yankees have not had very good luck since 2009 with injuries. This team has really put themselves in difficult positions. Now, what will be fascinating this season is this world with Judge. And we'll talk about Cole here in a little bit. With Judge now, because you get Trent Grisham, thankfully, in that deal. That is really kind of saving your butt right now in center field. But Judge has to hit. Where does Stanton go?
He's got to hit too. They're reliant on a couple of these guys. And I think it's a bit similar to the Blue Jays, who we'll touch on later, where I think 1-5 in the lineup has to really carry a lot of the load. They're not necessarily like Trent Grisham's a great guy in center field, but he's not really going to give you a ton of value in the batter's box. They've got a couple of these guys. You know, what are you going to do at catcher? What are you going to do at third base? What are you going to do at a couple of these positions? What's DJ LeMahieu look like in 2024? Where does that go, right? Because it's a couple of years now where, you know, the trajectory is going down. Can he stop that trend? If he can, I think that's a big help for them, but I'm certainly not going to bet on it.
Nope. So now this rotation is interesting. Carlos Rodon, of course, like I said, will be in reference to fantasy baseball. We were drafting in one of my leagues, and we all kind of gave credit to the dude who took him, you know, in the 21st round, because it was like, if this guy pans out, he could help you win a league with the ceiling that he has, but the floor that he has is, you wonder if this dude might even be in the starting rotation by the end of the year. It also includes Stroman, Nestor Cortes Jr., Clark Schmidt, and other names like Luke Weaver and others. So you now have a rotation that is potentially looking at Marcus Stroman as your number one. And that's a problem. That's a problem.
I've been there, man. Let me tell you, it doesn't feel great. It does not. You don't have a ton of confidence in it. The whole Marcus Stroman experience, you know, I think that was an interesting pivot. They pivoted off Blake Snell into Marcus Stroman to do that after he'd come out and said some things, I think, about the fans, right? He said they were kind of bums. He's a guy who's put on Instagram a couple of times, like, sorry if I don't get back to you, I'm super locked in, and then has had some really underwhelming training results, right? And if that's your number three, number four starter, he's locked in. Don't worry, he's super locked in. If that's your number three, number four starter, that's a guy who, and I think I had a point here about Dylan Cease, right? Where Dylan Cease takes the ball every fifth day. Dylan Cease is taking the ball every fifth day, 2023, 2022, 2021, 2020. Marcus Stroman's one of those guys too, but that's more valuable as a guy who's the back end of your playoff rotation than the front end, right? That's more valuable as a regular season guy than a playoff guy. There are certain things that I think the Yankees think they need, and I don't know that Marcus Stroman's going to be the guy to provide them.
Yes. Couldn't agree more, dude. So some other injury updates. We'll just go down the list here. So Devin Williams, as a Cub fan, obviously, you know, it sadly helps them. It's hard to say that. But as a baseball fan, Devin Williams has been so fun to watch. He's been so electric up there in Milwaukee. But he is unfortunately going to be down for quite some time. He was just diagnosed with two stress fractures in his back, and right now is scheduled to miss multiple months. Not only is it a 6-week recovery period of basically doing nothing, which literally requires no activity, you then have 6 weeks of rehab to build that all back up. That's going to be tough, because the buildup to get ready for in-season form, It's different than having the opportunity to rest during the off season. So that'll be tough.
Especially too, as a changeup guy, that's such a feel pitch, you know, and he can go out there and throw it against AAA hitters. And I think he'll probably get as many whiffs as possible, but that first game back in the big leagues is going to be really tough for him, just because I'm not sure he's going to have the feel for it.
It's going to be tough. And that team has lost a lot. They've gained some guys, you know, in some deals and other moves, but the bullpen is still solid. Joel Piamps and some other names will definitely have opportunities now to service that bullpen. But now you take a star-studded closer out, you now have to put a new guy into that position, where closing a game is a hell of a lot different than coming into the seventh and eighth, right? And that's a lot more pressure.
And your seventh and eighth, your seventh guy goes to the eighth, your sixth guy goes to the seventh, your lefty has to go up a leverage spot. It has a real cascading effect when you lose your closer, especially before the season even starts.
100%. So the Brewers, they lost Council. I don't feel bad. Whatever.
In an unbiased way, we don't feel bad.
Well, again, we're unbiased, right? We're unbiased. As my Cubs, it looks really shiny today. Actually, it's really shiny. My sign. I'm gonna look this way because I'm not used to being on camera all the time either. One, actually, another interesting one that came out too is Tommy Edman, utility man with the Cardinals, will likely start on a 10-day IL for the season. He is having some pretty bad soreness with his surgically repaired wrist. The Cardinals are a heavily veteran squad this year, so losing any form of depth or versatility is tough for this team right now. So that should be interesting. Did you have any thoughts there?
Yeah, I find what they did, especially in the rotation, I find what they did really interesting this offseason. You get a guy like Sonny Gray, get a guy like Kyle Gibson, really try and fill that out. I think probably the second offseason in a row where everybody kind of thought they would trade from maybe their outfield surplus. You have a guy like Dylan Carlson who's going into the year as their fourth outfielder that I think could probably start for a lot of teams. But maybe the Tommy Edman thing gives you a chance to kind of move Brendan Donovan around. Maybe you get somebody into the lineup that wasn't slated to be. And it gives you a chance at least to kind of prove your worth.
Yep. Last thing here, which I'm very, very excited about, is right-handed starting pitcher for the Orioles. Kyle Bradish did throw a bullpen yesterday with no pain. This would have been on Wednesday of this week. His bullpen only included fastballs, which I think is a key note there. But I think it's not going to be until potentially mid-year that we see this guy back on the mound. And when we do, it's going to be limited, and it's sad because wonder if he just takes the surgery and gets it done, he's back next year and you just move forward with it. Now it's like it's a scary position for him.
That's such a March ass story too, right? He's throwing bullpens but fastballs. This is like I coach a team of teenagers, and it's like that's what we do in like early February. It's like, hey, we're gonna go off flat ground, we're gonna throw only fastballs, don't worry about it, we got lots to get to. And I'm not sad about it, but I think as neutral baseball observers, a lot of people could be sad about it because that Orioles rotation was set up to be really good. You know, I think Tyler Wells had a really good season, Grayson Rodriguez, everybody's kind of waiting for that leap. You know, he was better in the second half than he was in the first half, but if you're looking at the prospect pedigree, that's a guy who is at one point number one right-handed pitching prospect in baseball. So that if he can continue that trajectory, that they were set up in a position where, like with Corbin Burns at the front of that rotation, they could have been really, really formidable. And you start to now work backwards. It's the exact same thing like when we talked about with the bullpen, right? You know, your number two starter is out. So number three becomes number two, number four becomes number three. You really start to feel the depth kind of thin out a little bit.
B, first time on the pod, crushed it. Now what we're going to do is we're going to roll into episode 72.
I have more takes here. I got takes for days. Can we talk about, I have one that.
Okay. 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 You know what? I'll give you 2 minutes here. You give as many takes as you want in 2 minutes. Here we go.
All right. Start the clock. What's going on with the Dodgers? Gavin Lux's yips is to me the most fascinating story of the entire spring. You go in to the season with a guy who's got a rebuilt ACL. I'm really on the clock right now. You go into the season with a guy who's got a rebuilt ACL, and you just immediately pencil him in as your starting shortstop on a team that's the World Series favorite. Turns out, oh, by the way, he can't throw to first base. Oh, okay. No worries. We're going to take our star right fielder, who we've already moved to second base. We're going to play him in a position, shortstop, the most important defensive position on the field. He hasn't played it since high school. High school was a long time ago for me, and I'm younger than Mookie Betts. That's very, very concerning. Oh, by the way, you spent $700 million on a guy who can't pitch at all this season in Shohei Ohtani. Yoshinobu Yamamoto is freakish. I think that stuff is incredible, but there's probably an adjustment period when it comes over from an NPB to Major League Baseball. You've seen some of that this spring where he's had some issues with maybe not hard hit baseballs, but baseballs that are, you know, pitches that are really good that are still turning into base hits because he's throwing against the best hitters in the entire world, right? These are guys that
1 minute left
are hitting pitches that Japanese hitters may not have hit last season. So there's always an adjustment period going into that. World Series favorites starting Tyler Glasnow opening day, that would really concern me. That I have no faith in whatsoever. I think hurt pitchers get hurt. That's my kind of truism on how this stuff goes. Hitters hit, hurt pitchers get hurt. Tyler Glasnow, I would have a really hard time betting on as a guy who fills that role for them in the entire season. If Yamamoto can fill in as your ace, that's great. But now you have to immediately fill that hole that he just provided as your number two. Bobby Miller's a freak. I'll just put that one aside. But Walker Buehler, what does that look like after a second Tommy John? What does the bullpen look like? What are we doing at, you know, behind the plate? Will Smith's a great player, but I think when you look at the idea of the Dodgers, and then you have that moment of like, holy shit, the best team in baseball just signed Shohei Ohtani, and they signed the best player in Japan. Oh no, that's my clock.
That is your clock. But
You get into the details, and I don't think it holds up to as much scrutiny as people would think. That's why I think the NL West is sneaky wide open.
I think that I can get into a little bit of a 2-minute warning thing if for our future episodes, because I think Bacon, for anybody that's listening, is getting an invitation to come back on. Folks, we're going to move on over here to episode 72. We're going to talk about them Toronto Blue Jays. We'll talk to you here soon.